Darkin Rawl strolled around him, watching his eyes as Richard tried to follow him by turning his head.
"It's quite good. It really is. The best I have ever seen. Done by the Great One himself."
"What?" Darkin Rawl licked his fingers and stopped in front of him.
"The wizard's web around you. I've never seen one like it. It's wound around you tight as a cocoon. Been there a good long time. It's quite intricate. I don't think even I could untangle it."
"If you are trying to convince me George Cipher is not my father, you have failed. If you are trying to convince me you are mad, you needn't bother. That much I already know."
"My dear boy," Rawl laughed, "I couldn't care less who you believe your father to be. Nonetheless, there is a wizard's web hiding the truth from you."
"Really? I'll play along. Who's my father if it's not George Cipher?"
"I wouldn't know," Rawl shrugged.
"The web hides it, but from what I've seen, I have my suspicions." The smile left.
"What does the Book of Counted Shadows say?"
Richard shrugged.
"That's your question? You disappoint me."
"How so?"
"Well, after what was done to your bastard father, I thought sure you'd want to know the old wizard's name."
Darkin Rawl glared as he slowly licked his fingertips.
"What is the old wizard's name?"
It was Richard's turn to smile. He spread his arms wide.
"Cut me open. It's written on my guts. You will have to find it there."
Richard kept the smirk on his face. He knew he was defenseless and was hoping Rawl would be driven to kill him. If he was dead, the book died with him. No box, no book. Rawl was going to die. Kaelin would be safe then. That was all that mattered.
"In 1 week, it will be the first day of winter, and I will know the name of the wizard and have the power to snatch him from wherever he is and bring his hide to me."
"In 1 week, you will be dead. You have only 2 boxes. Darkin Rawl licked his fingers again and smoothed them over his lips.
"I have 2 right now, and the 3rd is on its way here as we speak."
Richard tried not to believe him, let his face show nothing.
"A brave boast, but a lie nonetheless. In 1 week, you are going to die."
Rawl raised his eyebrows.
"I speak the truth. You have been betrayed. The same one who has betrayed you to me has also betrayed the box to me. It will be here in a few days."
"I don't believe you," Richard said flatly. Darkin Rawl licked his fingertips and turned, walking around the circle of white sand.
"No. Let me show you something."
Richard followed him to a wedge of white stone, upon which sat a flat slab of granite held up by 2 short, fluted pedestals. In the center of the slab sat 2 of the boxes of Ordin. One was ornately jeweled, like the one Richard had seen before. The other was as black as the nightstone, its surface a void in the light of the room. The box itself, its protective covering removed.
2 of the boxes of Ordin, Rawl announced, holding his hand out to them. "Why would I want the book? The book would be useless to me without the 3rd box. You had the 3rd box. The one who betrayed you told me so. If the box were not on its way, why would I need the book? I would instead cut you open to get the location of the box."
Richard shook with anger.
"Who betrayed me in the box? Tell me the name."
"Or what? Or you will cut me open and read the name on my guts?"
"I will not betray the name of one who has helped me. You are not the only one with honor."
Richard didn't know what to believe. Rawl was right about one thing. He wouldn't need the book if he didn't have all 3 boxes. Someone really had betrayed him. It was impossible, but it must be true.
"Just kill me," Richard said in a weak voice, turning away.
"I'm not going to tell you. You might as well cut me open."
"First, you must convince me you are telling the truth. You could be deceiving me that you really know the whole book. You may have read just the 1st page and burned the rest, or simply be inventing what you have told me of it."
Richard folded his arms and looked back over his shoulder.
"And what possible reason could I have for wanting you to believe me?"
Rawl shrugged.
"I thought you cared about this confessor, Kaelin. I had thought you cared what happened to her. You see, if you can't convince me that you're telling the truth, then I will have to cut her open and have a look at her entrails, see if they have anything to say about this.
Richard glared. That would be the biggest mistake you could make. You need her to confirm the truth of the book. If you harm her, you destroy your chance.
Rawl shrugged.
So you say. How would I know you really do know what the book says? It could even be that this is the manner in which she will confirm the truth.
Richard said nothing, his mind racing in 1,000 directions at once.
Think of the solution, he told himself, not the problem.
How did you get the covering off that box without the book?
The Book of Counted Shadows is not the only source of information about the boxes. There are other places that are of aid to me.
He looked down at the dark box.
It took a full day, and every talent I have to get the covering off.
He looked back up, lifting an eyebrow.
It's held on with magic, you know. But I did it, and I will be able to do it to the other two.
It was discouraging that Rawl had managed to get the covering off. To open a box, the covering had to be removed. Richard had hoped that without the book, Rawl wouldn't be able to figure out how to remove the covers and not be able to open a box. That hope was now lost. Richard stared blankly at the jeweled box.
Page 12 of the Book of Counted Shadows. Under the heading, Shedding the Covers, it says, the covering on the boxes may be removed by anyone with the knowledge, not only the one who has put them in play.
Richard reached out and lifted the jeweled box off the granite.
Page 17, third paragraph down on the page. If not, however, in the hours of darkness, but in the hours of the sun, the covering may be removed from the second box in the following manner. Hold the box where the sun may touch it and face north. If there be clouds, hold the box where the sun would touch it if they were not present, but face the west.
Richard held the box up in the late day sunlight.
Turn the box that the small end with the blue stone may face the quadrant with the sun. The yellow stone is to face up.
Richard turned the box.
With the second finger of the right hand on the yellow stone in the center of the top, place the thumb of the right hand on the clear stone in the corner of the bottom.
Richard grasped the box as directed.
Place the first finger of the left hand on the blue stone on the side facing away. The thumb of the left hand on the ruby stone of the side closest.
Richard placed his fingers so.
Clear your mind of all thought, and in its place, put nothing but the image of white with a square of black in its center. Pull the two hands apart, taking the covering away with them.
As Rawl watched, Richard cleared his mind, pictured white with black in the center, and pulled. The cover made a clicking sound and came apart. He held the box just over the granite and pulled the cover away as if he were putting an egg in a frying pan. Two equally black boxes sat side by side, seeming as if they would suck the light from the room.
Remarkable, Rawl breathed. And you know every part of the book this well.
Every word, Richard glared.
What I have told you will be of no aid in removing the third cover, however. They each come off differently.
Rawl gave a little wave of his hand.
No matter. I will get it off.
He held an elbow in one hand and touched a finger of the other to his chin, absorbed in thought.
You are free to go.
Richard frowned.
What do you mean I'm free to go? Aren't you going to try to get the book out of me? Kill me?
Rawl shrugged.
It would do me no good. The ways I have of getting information from you would damage your brain. The information would be disjointed. If it were anything else, I would be able to put the pieces together and figure it out, but I can see the book is too specific for that. The information would only end up being spoiled and of no use to me. You, therefore, are of no use to me right now, so you may go.
Richard was worried. There was something more to this.
Just like that? I may go. You must know I will try to stop you.
Rawl licked his fingers. His eyes came up.
I'm not worried about anything you could do. But you must be back here in 1 week when I open the boxes, if you care at all what happens to everyone.
Richard narrowed his eyes. What do you mean, if I care what happens to everyone? In 1 week, on the first day of winter, I'm going to open one of the boxes. I have been able to learn, from sources other than the Book of Counted Shadows, the same sources that told me how I might remove the cover, how to tell which box it is that would kill me. Beyond that, I will have to guess. If I open the right one, I will rule unchallenged. If I open the other, the world will be destroyed.
You would let that happen?
Darken Rawl's eyebrows lifted as he leaned toward Richard.
One world or no world, that is the way it shall be.
I don't believe you. You don't know which box will destroy you. Even if I were lying, I would still have 2 chances in 3 of having my way. You would have only 1 in 3 of it working out in your favor. Not good odds for you. But I'm not lying. Either the world is destroyed, or I rule it. You must decide which you would rather have happen. If you don't help me and I open the wrong box, I will be destroyed, along with everyone else, including those you care for. If you don't help me and I open the one I want, then I will turn Kaelin over to Constance for training. A good, long training. You will watch the whole thing before I kill you. Then Kaelin will bear me a son, an heir, a son who will be a confessor.
Richard went cold with pain worse than any Denna had given him.
You're trying to make me an offer of some sort?
Rawl nodded.
If you come back in time and help me, you will be permitted to go about your life. I will let you be.
What about Kaelin?
She will live here in the people's palace and be treated like a queen. She will have every comfort any woman could have. The kind of life a confessor is used to. Something you could never provide her. She will live a life of peace and safety, and she will bear me the confessor son I wish. Either way, she will bear me a son. That is my choice. Your choice is how? As Constance's pet? Or as a queen? So you see, I think you will be back. And if I am wrong, he shrugged. One world or no world?
Richard could hardly breathe.
I don't think you know which box will destroy you. You will have to decide what you will believe. I feel no need to convince you.
His expression darkened.
Choose wisely, my young friend. You may not like the choices I have given you, but you will like the results of not helping me even less. Not all choices in life are ones you would like, but those are all that are presented to you. Sometimes you must choose what is better for the ones you love than yourself.
I still don't think you know which box will kill you, Richard whispered.
Think what you will. But ask yourself if you are willing to bet Kaelin's future with Constance on what you think. Even if you were right, it still gives you only 1 chance in 3.
Richard felt empty, devastated.
Am I free to go now? Well, there are a few other matters you may want to know about.
Richard felt himself abruptly paralyzed, as if invisible hands were gripping him. He couldn't move a muscle.
Darken Rawl reached into Richard's pocket and took out the leather pouch with the nightstone. Richard fought against the force that held him, but could not move.
Rawl dumped the nightstone in his hand. He held it up in his palm, smiling.
Shadow things began to materialize. They gathered around Rawl, their numbers growing. Richard wished he could back away, but he couldn't move.
Time to go home, my friends.
The shadows began swirling around Rawl, faster and faster, until they were a blur of gray. A howl rose as they were sucked into the nightstone in a whirl of shadows and shapes.
Silence. They were gone. The nightstone turned to ash in Rawl's palm. He blew on it, and the ash puffed into the air.
The old one has been checking on you, using the nightstone to find where you are. The next time he searches, he is going to have a very unpleasant experience. He is going to find himself in the underworld.
Richard was furious at what Darken Rawl was doing to Zed, and he was furious that he couldn't move, that he was helpless and could only watch.
Richard relaxed his mind, shed the effort of trying to move, and replaced it with calm. He let his mind be empty, let himself be soft, limp. The force melted away. He took a step forward, free of the grip that had held him. Rawl smiled warmly.
Very good, my boy. You know how to break a wizard's web, at least a little one, but very good nonetheless. The old one chooses his seekers well.
He nodded. But you are more than a seeker. You have the gift. I look forward to the day we will be on the same side. I will enjoy having you around. The ones I have to deal with are very limited. After the world is joined, I will teach you more, if you wish.
We will never be on the same side. Never.
That is your choice, Richard. I bear no ill will toward you. I hope we will become friends.
Rawl studied Richard's face. There is one more thing. You may stay in the people's palace, or you may leave, if you wish. My guards will accommodate you. You will, however, have a wizard's web around you. Unlike the one you just broke, it will not affect you, but those who see you, and therefore you will not be able to break it. It's called an enemy web. All will see you as their enemy. That means that when your allies see you, they will see an enemy. Those who honor me will see you as yourself, since you are my enemy for the time being, and therefore already their enemy, at least for now. But those who are your friends will see you as the person they fear most, their worst enemy. I would like you to see the way people think of me, see the world through my eyes, see how unjustly I am regarded.
Richard didn't have to try to hold back the anger. There was none. He felt an odd sort of peace.
Am I free to go now?
Of course, my boy.
What about Mistress Denna?
Once you leave this room, you will be back under her power. She still controls the magic of your sword. Once a moored Sith has your magic, it is hers to keep. I cannot take it from her to give it back to you. You must get it back yourself.
Then how am I free to leave?
Isn't it obvious?
If you want to leave, you must kill her.
Kill her?
Richard was stunned. Don't you think if I could kill her, I would have done so by now? Do you think I would have endured what she has done to me if I could have killed her?
Darkin Rawl smiled a little smile. You have always been able to kill her.
How?
There is nothing that exists that has only one side. Even a piece of paper, thin as it is, has two sides. Magic is not one-dimensional either. You have been looking at only one side of it. Most people do. Look at the hole.
He pointed at the bodies of his two guards, the guards Richard had killed.
She controls your magic, yet you did this.
But that's different. It won't work against her.
Rawl nodded.
Yes, it will. But you must be its master. Half measures will get you in a lot of trouble. She controls you with one dimension of your magic, the side you offered her. You must use the other side. It is something all seekers have been capable of, but none has ever succeeded in mastering.
Perhaps you will be the first.
And if I'm not? If I don't succeed at it?
Darkin Rawl was sounding altogether too much like Zed for Richard's comfort. This was the way Zed had always taught him, by making him think for himself, find the answers in his own way, with his own mind.
Then, my young friend, you are going to be in for a very rough week. Denna is not pleased at how you embarrassed her. At the end of the week, she will bring you to me, and you will tell me your decision to help or to let all your friends suffer and die.
Just tell me how to use the magic of the sword, how to master it.
Of course! Right after you tell me the knowledge in the Book of Counted Shadows.
Rawl smiled.
I didn't think so.
Good night, Richard.
Don't forget.
1 week. The sun was fading as Richard left the garden and Darkin Rawl. His mind was spinning with all the things he had learned. That Darkin Rawl knew which box would kill him was troublesome, but he reasoned that Rawl might be using the wizard's first rule on him. Worse was that one of his own had betrayed him. He liked that not one bit. What he liked less was that he knew who it had to be. Shota had told him that Zed and Kalin would use their power against him. It had to be Zed or Kalin. He couldn't make that fit. No matter how he tried, no matter how he reasoned it out, it couldn't be either. Yet it had to be one. He loved them both more than his need to live. Zed had told him he had to be prepared to kill any of them if they jeopardized winning, even if he thought there was only a chance that they did. He forced the thought out of his mind. He had to think of a way to get away from Denna. He could be of no help, and none of the rest of it mattered if he couldn't get away from Denna. It would do him no good to think of the other problems if he couldn't get away, and if he didn't figure it out soon, then Denna was going to hurt him, and he wouldn't be able to think any more. The things she did to him made it too hard to think, made him forget things. He had to concentrate on that problem first, and worry about the others later. The sword, he thought. Denna controlled the magic of the sword. He didn't need the sword. Maybe he could just get rid of it, get rid of the magic she controlled. He reached for the hilt, but the pain of the magic stopped him before he could even touch it. He walked on through the halls toward Denna's quarters. It was still a long way. Maybe he could simply go another way, leave the people's palace. Dark and Rawl had told him none of the guards would stop him. When the next intersection of halls came, he started to turn down one. The pain dropped him to his knees. With great effort, he managed to get back to the hall he was supposed to be in. He had to stop and rest, the pain having taken his breath away. Close, just ahead, the way he was going, the bell for the evening devotion rang. He would go to the devotion. That would give him time to think. He knelt, relieved that the pain of the magic didn't come on. It was one of the squares with water. He liked them best. They were the most peaceful. Close to the edge of the water, with people all about, Richard put his head to the tile floor and began chanting, clearing his mind, letting himself go empty. He used the chanting to melt his worries, his fears, his concerns. He put his thoughts of all the problems away, let his mind seek peace, let it wander where it would. The devotion was over, it seemed, in no time. He stood, refreshed, renewed, and started off again toward Denna's quarters. The halls he passed through, the rooms and stairways, were breathtakingly beautiful, and Richard again marveled at them as he passed. He wondered at how someone as vile as Dark and Rawl would care to surround himself with such loveliness. Nothing was one-dimensional, two sides to the magic. Richard thought about the times the strange power had come awake in him, when he had felt sorry for Princess Violet, when the Queen's Guard had tried to harm Denna, when he had felt the pain of what had been done to Denna, when he thought of Rawl hurting Kalin, when Rawl's guards had tried to hurt Denna. He remembered that each time it had made part of his vision turn white. Each time he knew it was the magic of the sword. But in the past, the magic of the sword had been rage, too, yet this was a different kind of rage. He thought of how he used to feel when he drew the sword in anger, the wrath, the fury, the want to kill, the hate. Richard stopped dead still in the center of the quiet hall. It was late, and there were no people around. He was alone. He felt a wave of cold wash through him, prickle his skin. Two sides. He understood. The spirits help him. He understood. He brought it forth, let it cast everything in a white sheen. Cradled numbly in the white haze of the magic, nearly in a trance, Richard pushed the door to Denna's quarters closed behind himself. He calmly held the power, held the whiteness of it, held the joy and the sorrow of it. The quiet room was lit by one lamp on the bedside table, giving the softly scented air a warm, flickering glow. Denna sat completely naked in the center of her bed. Her legs were crossed, her braid undone, and her hair brushed out. The Aegil was on a gold chain around her neck, hanging between her breasts. Her hands lay nested in her lap. She watched him with big, wistful eyes.
"You have come to kill me, my love," she whispered.
He nodded slowly, watching her.
Yes, mistress. She smiled a little. That is the first time you have ever called me simply mistress. You have always called me Mistress Denna in the past. It means something?
Yes. It means everything, my mate. It means I forgive you everything.
I have made myself ready.
Why are you naked?
The lamplight reflected in the wetness of her eyes.
Because everything I have to wear is moored Sith. I have nothing else. I did not wish to die in the clothes of a moored Sith. I wish to die as I was born. Denna. Nothing more.
I understand, he whispered. How did you know I was coming to kill you?
When Master Rol chose me to go after you, he said he wouldn't order me to go, but that I must volunteer. He said the prophecies foretold of a seeker who would be the first to master the magic of the sword, the white magic, that this one would cause the blade of the sword to turn white. He said that if you turned out to be the one of whom the prophecy spoke, it would mean that I was to die by your hand, if you so chose. I asked to be sent, to be your moored Sith. Some of the things I have done to you, I have done to no other, in the hope you would be the one and kill me for it. When you did what you did to the princess, I suspected. When you killed the two guards today, I knew. You should not have been able to. I was holding you by the sword's magic at the time.
Everything was white around the childlike beauty of her face.
I'm so sorry, Denna, he whispered.
You will remember me?
I will have nightmares the rest of my life. Her smile widened. I'm glad. She seemed genuinely proud.
You love this woman, Galen?
He frowned a little. How do you know that?
Sometimes, when I hurt men enough and they don't know what they're saying, they cry for their mothers, for their wives. You cried for one named Kaelin. You will choose her for your mate?
I cannot, he said, past the lump in his throat. She is a confessor. Her power would destroy me.
I'm sorry. This hurts you?
He nodded slowly. More than anything you have done to me.
Good.
Denna smiled sadly.
I'm glad the one you love is able to give you more pain than was I. Richard knew that in her twisted way, Denna meant this as a comfort to him, that for her to be happy that he would get more pain from another was a giving of her love. He knew that Denna sometimes gave him pain to show that she cared for him. In her eyes, at least, if this other woman could give him more pain, that was a demonstration of love. A tear ran down his face. What had they done to this poor child?
It is a different kind of pain. None could be your equal in the things you have done.
A tear of pride rolled down her cheek.
Thank you, my love,
she breathed. She took the Aegeal from her neck and held it up hopefully.
Would you wear this to remember me by? It will not hurt you around your neck, or if you hold the chain, only if you hold the Aegeal itself in your hand.
Richard held her face in the white glow.
It would be an honor, my mate.
He bent, letting her put it over his head, letting her give his cheek a kiss.
How will you do it?
She asked. He knew what she meant. He swallowed back the lump in his throat. His hand went smoothly to the hilt of the sword. Slowly, he drew the Sword of Truth. It didn't ring the way it always had in the past. It hissed. A white, hot hiss. Richard didn't look, but he knew the blade had turned white. He held her wet eyes. The power flooded through him. He was at peace. All anger, all hate, all malice was gone. Where he had felt these things from the sword before, he now felt only love for this child, this vessel into whom others had poured pain, this receptacle of cruelty, this innocent, tortured soul who had been trained to do the things she hated above all else, hurting others. His empathy with her made him ache with sorrow for her, with love for her.
Denna, he whispered.
You could just let me go. There is no need to do this. Please, let me go. Don't make me have to do this.
She held her chin up. If you try to leave, I will stop you with the pain of the magic and make you sorry you have been trouble to me. I am Mord Sith. I am your mistress. I can be no more than who I am. You can be no less, my mate.
He nodded sadly and put the tip of the sword between her breasts, the tears in his eyes and the white glow making it difficult to see. Denna gently took the tip of the sword and moved it up a few inches.
My heart is here, my love.
Holding the sword against her, he bent and put his left arm tenderly around her soft shoulders. He held the power with all his strength as he kissed her cheek.
Richard, she whispered, I have never had a mate like you before. I'm glad I will have no other. You are a very rare person. You are the only person since I was chosen who has cared that I was in pain or done anything to stop it. Thank you. For last night, for teaching me what it could be like.
Tears dripped from his face. He held her close.
Forgive me, my love. She smiled. Everything.
Thank you for calling me, my love. It is good to hear it once, in truth, before I die.
Twist the sword to be sure it is finished. And Richard, please, take my last breath, as I have taught you. I wish you to have my last breath of life.
In a daze, he put his mouth over hers, kissing her, and didn't even feel his right hand moving. There was no resistance. The sword went through her as if she were gossamer. He felt his hand twist the sword, and he took her last breath of life. He laid her gently back on the bed, lay down next to her, and cried uncontrollably as he stroked her ashen face. He grieved to undo what he had done.
Chapter 44. It was deep in the night when he left Denna's quarters. The halls were empty except for flickering shadows. Richard's footsteps echoed from the polished stone floors and walls as he walked in a mournful daze, watching his shadow rotate around himself as he passed torches, feeling comfort only at having his pack on his back once more and to be leaving the people's palace. He didn't know where he was going, only that he was going to go away from here. The pain of an Aegil in the small of his back slammed him to a halt, brought sweat instantly to his face as he tried to take a breath, but couldn't. Fire seared through his hips and legs.
Going somewhere, came a ruthless whisper. Constance.
His shaking hand struggled to reach his sword. She laughed as she watched him. A vision of giving her control of the magic, of the whole nightmare starting over again, flashed through his mind. His hand backed away from the sword and kept the anger of the magic in check. She came around to stand before him, her arm around him, holding the Aegil against his back, keeping his legs paralyzed. She was wearing her red leather.
No, not ready to try to use the magic on me yet. You will. You will try before long. You will try to save yourself with it. She smiled. Save yourself the extra pain. Use it now. Maybe I will have mercy on you if you try it now.
Richard thought about all the ways Denna had given him pain and how she had taught him to tolerate it so she could give him more. He brought to bear everything he had learned. He controlled the pain, blocking it enough to draw a deep breath. He swept his left arm around Constance, forcing her body tight against himself. He grabbed the Aegil in his fist, Denna's Aegil, hanging from his neck. Pain shot up his arm. He endured it, dismissed it. Constance gave a grunt as he lifted her off her feet, pulling her up his body. She tried to press her Aegil harder into his back, but she didn't have the leverage, and he had her arm pinned so she couldn't move it. When he had her lifted high enough, her contorted face in front of his, he pressed Denna's Aegil to her chest. Her eyes widened, her expression slackened. Richard remembered Denna holding her Aegil against Queen Melina in this manner.
It had the same effect on Constance. She shook, easing the pressure against his back. Still, it was hurting him, as was the Aegil in his hand. Richard gritted his teeth against the pain.
I'm not going to kill you with the sword. To do that, I would have to forgive you everything. I could never bring myself to forgive you for betraying a friend. I could forgive your deeds against me, but not those against your friend, Denna. That is the one thing I could never forgive.
Constance gasped with the agony.
Please.
Promise made? He sneered.
No, please, don't.
Richard twisted the Aegil as he had seen Denna do to the queen. Constance flinched and went limp in his grip. Blood ran from her ears. He let her lifeless body slip to the ground. Promise kept. Richard stared a long time at the Aegil held tightly in his fist before he realized it was causing pain and released it at last to hang from its chain around his neck. He looked down at the dead moored Sith as he caught his breath.
Thank you, Denna, he thought, for teaching me to endure the pain. You have saved my life.
It took him the better part of an hour to find his way out of the labyrinth of halls, out into the frigid night, to the expanse of grounds. He kept a tight grip on the hilt of the sword as he went past two big guards at the open gate through the outer wall, but they only gave a polite nod of their heads, as if he were an invited guest departing after a royal dinner. He stopped, gazing out at the starlit country before him. He had never been so happy to see stars. He turned about, looking at everything. The people's palace, surrounded by imposing sheer walls, sat atop an immense plateau that dropped off before him to a plain. The plateau stood hundreds of feet above the barren land, but there was a road cut into the cliffs, switching back and forth, descending to the flat land.
Horse, sir?
Richard spun around. One of the guards had spoken to him.
What? I asked if you would like a horse brought up, sir. You look to be leaving. It's a long walk.
What's a long walk? The guard gave a nod at the drop.
Sir Azrith Plains. You're looking to the west across Sir Azrith Plains. It's a long walk across. Would you like a horse?
It unnerved him that Darkin Rawl had so little concern for what he might do that he would let him have a horse.
Yes, I would like a horse.
The guard blew a small whistle in a series of short and long bursts to another man on the wall. Richard heard the short tune repeated into the distance. The guard resumed his post.
Won't be long, sir. How far to the Rang Shaddaa Mountains?
The man frowned a little.
Where in the Rang Shaddaa? They run a long way.
Northwest of Tamarang, as close as they come to Tamarang. He rubbed his chin and thought.
4, maybe 5 days?
He considered the other guard.
Wouldn't you say?
The other shrugged.
If he rides hard day and night and changes horses often, maybe 5. But I doubt it could be done in 4.
Richard's heart sank. Of course Rawl didn't care if he had a horse. Where was he going to go? Michael and the Westland army were 4 or 5 days away in the Rang Shaddaa. He couldn't get to them and back before the week was out, before the first day of winter. But Caelan had to be closer. Rawl had sent that man with the black stripe in his hair and 2 quads to get her. What was she doing this close? He had told them not to come after him. His anger flashed at Chase for not following his instructions, for not keeping them all away. Then his anger wilted. If it were him, he wouldn't have been able to sit back and not know what had happened to a friend. Maybe they weren't in the mountains, but all on their way. But what good was an army going to do? 10 good men in a place like this could hold off an army for a month. 2 soldiers in full battle armor came riding through the gate, bringing a 3rd horse with them.
Would you like an escort, sir? The guard asked. They are good men.
No, Richard glared. I will be going alone. The guard waved the soldiers off.
You'll be going west-southwest, then?
Richard didn't answer, so he went on.
Tamarang, the place in the Rang Shaddaa you asked about. It's to the west-southwest. A piece of advice, if I may, sir?
Go on, Richard said cautiously.
If you go that way, across the Azrith Plains, that near morning you'll come to a boulder field among sharp hills. There'll be a split in the road in a deep canyon. Take to the left.
Richard's eyes narrowed. Why?
Because to the right, there'll be a dragon, a red dragon, a red dragon of a bad temper.
Master Rawls' dragon.
Richard mounted the horse and stared down at the guard.
Thanks for the advice. I'll remember.
He put heel to the horse and took to the steep road, down the side of the plateau, down the switchbacks. Beyond one, he saw a drawbridge being lowered as he approached. By the time he reached it, it was down, and he never slowed, galloping the horse across the heavy wooden planks. He could see that the road was the only practical way up the cliffs of the plateau, and the yawning gap spanned by the bridge would prove an impasse to any advancing army. Even without the formidable force of defenders he knew was behind him, even without Darkenrall's magic, the simple inaccessibility of the people's palace was defense enough. As he rode, Richard unbuckled the hated collar and flung it into the night. He vowed that he would never again wear a collar, not for anyone, not for any reason. Running the horse across the plain, Richard looked over his shoulder at the black shape of the People's Palace atop the plateau, looming up, blotting out an entire quadrant of stars. The cold air against his face made his eyes water, or else it was his thoughts about Benna. Try as he might, he couldn't get her out of his mind. If it weren't for Kaelin and Zed, he would have killed himself back there. He was hurting that much. Killing with the sword in anger, out of rage and hate, was horrible. Killing with the sword's white magic, out of love, was beyond horror. The blade had returned to its polished silver gloss, but he knew how to make it white again. He hoped he would die before that was ever required. He didn't know if he could ever bring himself to do it again. And yet, here he was, racing across the night on his way to find Zed and Kaelin, to find which of them had betrayed the box to Darkenrall, had betrayed everyone to Darkenrall. The whole thing didn't make any sense. Why would Rall use the Nightstone to trap Zed if Zed was the traitor? And why would he send men after Kaelin if she was the one? Yet Shota had said each would try to kill him. It had to be one of them. What was he to do? Turn the sword white and kill both? He knew that was foolish. He would rather die himself first than harm either. But what if Zed was betraying them, and the only way to save Kaelin would be to kill his old friend? Or what if it was the other way around? Would he still rather die first, then? The important thing was to stop Rall. He had to recover the last box. He had to stop wasting his energy thinking about things he couldn't know. All that mattered was stopping Rawl. Then everything else would fall into place. He had found the box once. He would have to find it again. But how? There was no time. How was he going to find Zed and Kaelin? He was one man on a horse, and there was a whole country to search. They wouldn't be traveling by road. Not if Chase was with them. Chase would keep them off the roads, well hidden. Richard didn't know the roads, much less the trails. This was a fool's task. There was too much country to search. Darkenrall had planted too many doubts in him. Swirling thoughts twisted on themselves, became more and more confusing, hopeless. He felt that his own mind was his worst enemy right now. Richard cleared his mind and chanted the devotion to keep himself from thinking. He smiled at the stupidity of chanting a devotion to a man he wanted to kill, but he chanted anyway as he rode on into the night.
Master Rawl, guide us. Master Rawl, teach us. Master Rawl, protect us. In your light we thrive. In your mercy we are sheltered. In your wisdom we are humbled. We live only to serve. Our lives are yours.
Twice he walked the horse to rest it, but pushed on hard the rest of the time. The Azrith Plains seemed endless. The flat country, devoid of almost all vegetation, stretched on forever. The chanting helped him keep his mind clear of all thoughts except one, the horror of killing Denna. That memory he couldn't shake. Those tears he couldn't keep back. Dawn brought him his own shadow to chase. Boulders appeared, looking out of place on the flat ground, casting long shadows of their own.